Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 3rd chapter, verses 15 to 25. Rishirvacha evam giritra piyaya pibhashita patya pyatata pasansaritpya sangsmarito marma pidakubhagishun yan ahako vishasisham samakshata. The great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailash, having thus been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly, although at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. Mukam karati vachalam pangam langayate Yakipam tamam mande shi gurum dinatarnam. Om agyana turandasya gyanan chana shalakaya. Chakshur minitam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manabhistam stapitam yena bhutale. Sayam rupa kadamayam dadati swaparantikam. Namaham Vishnu padaya. Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Viranta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Sunyavahi Pashyachate Shatavine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadatha Shri Vasadi Gauravindavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Daksha is bewildered by pride. Darpa, Smaya, Dambha, Abhiman, desiring profit, adoration, and distinction. And these are like weeds in his heart, choking his devotional creeper. He's thinking, I don't need to worship Shiva and Brahma. They're just demigods. I'll just worship Vishnu. But how can he please Vishnu without pleasing his devotees? Because the devotees of the Lord, they're always wrapped in the service of the Lord. The Lord wants to see his devotees happy. So now Daksha has invited everyone to his grand sacrifice for the pleasure of Vishnu. Everyone, that is, except for Lord Shiva and Sati and Lord Brahma. So Sati sees everyone going in their airplanes to her father's house except herself. So she feels left out. She begs her husband to go. She gives so many arguments. I want to see my relatives, dress up, socialize. I'm not a pure devotee, like you. I want to see my place of birth. I have emotional desires. What is that? Emotional needs, which you may not have. You just sit there whole day under the tree meditating. But sometimes I need to get out and have fun with my friends and relatives. So Sati is not satisfied just living under the tree. She wants to go out and see her relatives. Blue-throated one, you're merciful to everyone. Why not me? So one may go uninvited to a father's house, husbands, friends, spiritual masters. So finally, I'm half your body, so therefore you should be merciful to me. So now Lord Shiva is going to speak. First, in verse 15, there is a nice comment by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. So the question arises, Prabhupada says, why a liberated personality like Lord Shiva was so unhappy? Yes, he's liberated. What? Not hearing anything? Okay, is that better? You don't see me. Oh, that's better. Okay, now I can't see.
Okay,
You can hear me better? Okay. Like that? It's okay? Just see. Different angles of vision. Okay. Is that right? Oh, boy. Now I can't see anything. Okay. I'll put it here, yeah.
That's right.
I can't read anything.
How's that?
Terrible. Okay, wait. I can't see. Maybe if you put it that way. It's down, but out? Is that?
Sorry.
Okay, let's come. Well, the problem is that.
That's perfect.
Is it okay? Yeah, that's good. Is that right?
Yep.
All right. So the question is, as Srila Prabhupada asks, that how could a liberated soul feel bad about someone criticizing him? Why is he feeling sorry about the heart-piercing speeches of Daksha if he's a liberated soul? Obviously, he's a liberated soul, so why is this a problem for him? Liberated soul, Brahma-bhuta, prasanatman, ashochati, nakanchati, yes. Yes. Exactly. Prabhupada says, because he's the incarnation in charge of the material mode of ignorance, sometimes he's affected by the pleasure and pain of the material world. The difference between the pleasure and pain of this world and that of the spiritual world is that in the spiritual world, the effect is qualitatively absolute. Therefore, one may feel sorry in the absolute world, but the manifestation of so-called pain is always full of bliss. So Brijan makes a comment that this is our experience, that someone criticizes us or hurts us very deeply, then whenever we hear that person's name mentioned, then the first thing we think of is, oh, that person offended me. And so this is what's happening here with Lord Shiva. Externally, we may smile if somebody talks about the person, but internally, we feel the hurt. So here Prabhupada makes a point about the difference between material pain and spiritual pain. So what's the difference? Here Prabhupada says, in spiritual world, the effect is qualitatively absolute. So I mean, that's very big words. But what does that mean, actually? The effect is qualitatively absolute. So pain and pleasure, pain in the spiritual world, it's qualitatively absolute. Prabhu, so why are you feeling unhappy? You're not in the spiritual world. That's a good answer. Yes. Either the person who's giving us trouble is not in the spiritual world, or we're not. Okay. So what is it? What is actually the... How can pain be pleasure? And this... Yeah.
It's a spiritual experience.
It's a spiritual experience.
Yeah, but it's
okay.
It's an experience in the spiritual world, and all experiences are...
Okay, well, what if... But even here, you can experience... that too, even you maybe if you're in spiritual consciousness. Here also. Yes. Yes, what will you say?
Devotional service, any sukha or dukkha, they are both great treasure because they both are purified from materialism.
Okay, so you say it's happiness because you get purified. For the devotee, if he experiences some pain in the service of Krishna, then it's pleasure because he's getting purified. Yeah. Okay, he's thinking if by my unhappiness Krishna is pleased, then that is my pleasure. I think Bhaktivinoda also says that, yes.
Everything is Krishna.
Yes, if you think it's Krishna, then it must be good. Yes.
There's an incident like that in the Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada arrived in Melbourne.
Yeah, but then as he played the show of fiction to Prabhupada,
right.
He was very, very brave here.
Yes.
Was
of great ecstasy. Prabhupada looked grave, but he said it was a moment of great ecstasy. So this is the explanation. And the proof is, yes.
Well, I was just thinking this other
point. Hare Krishna.
And although Prabhupada mentions this, because Lord Shiva is a country with a lot of ignorance, another way to look at it is that he was feeling compassion for Daksha.
Okay, another way to look at it is he was feeling compassion for Daksha.
It's like that time when the devotees asked Prabhupada to ask some Indian gentleman to donate some land.
Right. It'll be an offense. That's right. So if the spiritual master asks somebody to do something and you refuse, then it's an offense. So better we don't ask. So he was feeling compassion for Daksha here.
Possibly.
Vajra Bihari Prabhu says. So let's see what Prabhupada says at the end of the purport. One may feel sorry in the absolute world. The manifestation of so-called pain is always full of bliss. So the point Prabhupada is making is that the effect of the pain is happiness. Even though you're feeling some problem, some pain, some distress, the effect of it will be that you're blissful. So that's the point. The spiritual pain makes you blissful, whereas material pain makes you distress. So here Prabhupada gives an example. Once Lord Krishna, in his childhood, was chastised by his mother, Yashoda, and Lord Krishna cried. So that Queen Kunti, she said, Gopyadade traikita kasidamatava yate tashashikali lanjana sambhamaksha. But although he shed tears from his eyes, this is not to be considered a reaction of the mode of ignorance, for the incident is full of transcendental pleasure. So generally, if you cry, that's the mode of ignorance. But when Krishna cries, it's not. Well, Prabhupada points out. When Krishna was playing in so many ways, sometimes it appeared he caused distress to the gopis. But actually, such dealings were full of transcendental bliss. That is the difference between the material and spiritual worlds. So the difference is in the effect of the pain. Yeah.
So, Lord Shiva, Prabhupada explained both things here.
Yes. Okay. What is Lord Shiva experiencing here? Material or spiritual pain? Yeah. Both. Both. Material pain is that, the pain that he, these are words, remembering the words. And the spiritual pain is what?
Compassion.
Compassion, as Vajra Bihari points out. Okay. So we're understanding the mentality of Lord Shiva. He will explain his own mentality very soon for us. What was going through his mind. Verse 16. The great Lord replied, my dear beautiful wife, you have said, this is argument number 4, that one may go to a friend's house without being invited. And this is true, provided such a friend does not find fault with a guest because of bodily identification and thereby become angry towards him. So you can go uninvited, but what if your friend treats you like an enemy? He's saying, yes, you said you can go uninvited. So Prabhupada says in purport, Lord Shiva could foresee that as soon as Sati reached her father's house, her father Daksha, being too puffed up because of bodily identification, would be angry at her presence. And although she was innocent and faultless, he would be mercilessly angry towards her. Lord Shiva warned that since her father was too puffed up by his material possessions, he would be angry. This would be intolerable for her. Therefore, it was better that she not go. So this over and over and over, he's going to say the same thing. This fact was already experienced by Lord Shiva because although Lord Shiva was faultless, Daksha had cursed him in so many harsh words. So he's speaking out of experience. I've experienced already what happened to me when I was in his presence, and the same thing's going to happen to you, although you're innocent. So verse 17. I'll read the verse because I like the Sanskrit. Vidyatapo vittavapurvayakulai satam gunai shad pira satamitarai Smitahatayam vittamana durtisha stabdhana pashyanti hitamabhuyasam. Although the six qualities of education, austerity, wealth, beauty, youth, and heritage are for the highly elevated, one who is proud of possessing them becomes blind. And thus, he loses his good sense and cannot appreciate the glories of great personalities. So what is the blindness of a person? He's blinded by education, austerity, wealth, beauty. So how is it that he's blind? What is it that he doesn't see? Sankirtanas. Okay. Very good. He doesn't see where it's coming from. He thinks this education is mine, this beauty is mine, but actually it's a gift of Krishna. Gift of Krishna. Anything else? What is the blindness? What doesn't he see? What doesn't this... Yeah. He doesn't see that it's temporary. Okay. What else doesn't he see? That's being pointed out in the verse. Yeah. Well, it's not in the verse, but that's true. Prabhupada says that at the end of the purport, if it's all zero, you have so many zeros, education, wealth, austerity, beauty, it's all a bunch of zeros. And without Krishna. If you put Krishna in front, it becomes very valuable. So what is it that he doesn't see? Yeah. No. Yes. 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 He doesn't see the glories of the great souls. He sees only his own glories. So if you see your own glories, how can you appreciate the glories of the saintly persons? So this is the problem. Therefore, sometimes it is said it's easier to approach someone who has nothing to preach than to a very rich man, because he's, even in the West, beware of the dog, Prabhupada used to say. They have big signs, they have big dogs. Whereas somebody who has nothing, it's easier. Yes. Let's see if I have that. So Madhavendrapuri Prabhu quoted the verse. It's Prabhupada actually mentions this verse in the purport about Kunti Devi. It's Janmaishraya Shutta Shibire Tamanamada Pumanaivahatya Vidatumbai Tamakinshana Gocharam. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself, respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So these things, these opulences, can become obstacles to devotional service if we're proud of them, if we see them in the wrong way. So this is a lesson that is being spoken here by Lord Shiva. He's trying to explain to his wife that, you know, you may think that Daksha is going to treat you very nicely, it's you're the daughter and myself, but actually he's blinded. He's blinded by these six opulences. How he won't be able to see the truth. He won't be able to appreciate my position or yours. So this is the teaching of Lord Shiva here in this verse, that he is trying to convince her that it is not good for you to go. And Hitopadesh, there is a verse that says, these four beneficial combinations are very rare. Charity accompanied by sweet words. Knowledge without pride. Valor with forbearance. And wealth with a charitable disposition. So this is from Hitopadesh. So knowledge without pride. Without pride. These four combinations are very rare. And two are charity, accompanied by sweet words, and wealth with a charitable disposition. And then one for the Kshatriyas, valor with forbearance. So you're going to fight, but you're also very forbearing. So these things are found in the saintly persons. Verse 18. One should not go... Oh, sorry, yes?
Yeah. Acha.
So this is a symptom that the knowledge. Okay, so Prabhuji has brought up the question that how do you stop this growth of pride by gaining knowledge? You get some knowledge and you go back and you want to instruct everyone and say, yes, now I'm an authority.
You know more than the temple president.
I know more than the temple president. The actual fruit of knowledge is humility. Yes. Achha. Okay. So one answer is that in Mayapur, in Bhaktivedya Purnamaraj's academy, that he has implemented that for all students. It's not his. What, whose is it? Bhaktivedanta. Okay. Yes, it's not Bhakti. It's Bhaktivedanta Academy. Sorry, I got the wrong name. Bhaktivedanta Academy. There is a standard that all students must do manual labor along with their studies. And I heard him say in one class, in Mayapur, I was recently in Mayapur, that if for students, if they do manual labor, then they will get realization of their knowledge. And there's an example that he gave from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that one very learned scholar came to visit Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he wanted to ask him a lot of questions about the process that he was, the process of devotional service. So he wasn't available. He was busy at the time when that person came. And he said, okay, I'll be with you in a half hour, 1 hour. But in the meantime, you please go and assist this brahmachari here in his service. So then he was a very polite man, very courteous. He said, all right, I'll do that. So then the brahmachari gave him some brass to polish. This is the deity's brass, so can you help polish it? And the guy was sitting, oh my God, polishing the brass? And I'm here to ask questions? But by the time he had finished polishing all the brass, all his questions were answered. So
should we implement something like that?
Perhaps it would be, some seva. I think that I don't know. So when Divyambar was here, she had some idea of the Vyayichi doing some community seva, like, some sort of instruction, one-on-one with the temple devotees. But we can come up with ideas like that. But that where the community, that they will appreciate that that there is some reciprocation here or some. Also, or any other ideas, I don't know. But yeah. Yes. So it's very wonderful that this fourth canto is emphasizing practical application of everything that we've learned. Sankirtan Das.
I dare to question the premise here.
What premise?
That the devotees will become proud. If they really know something, and then the other person feels out and is threatened.
Achha. Yes, we don't know the circumstances. It could be that the person feels threatened by the other person has gotten some knowledge. And now he's got some education. It's more if the person in authority may feel threatened by the superior knowledge of the person. Also, we would have to see the qualification of the student before he came to the Vyayichi and after he came to the Vyayichi. Because we get a lot of people who are just ready to leave. They're ready to leave their temple. They're ready to leave their temple. The reason they're coming is because they're having problems in the temple. But also my point is that what about all the ones who come from Vyayichi who have become great leaders, like Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj, like those in Russia who are leading the education over there, Madan Mohan, who is a Bhakti Shastri student, and Brihat Madanga, who has made colleges all over. What about these people also? They have come out.
They're all very proud.
Are they very proud? I've met Madan Mohan. No, he's such a... Yeah. So I think that there may be some change when they come to Vyayichi, But we also have to see what was the character before they came also. And if were they already... I mean, there's so many ways of looking at it. But of course...
They have been proud, now they're less proud.
Yeah. But I think a good thing to do would be to have some kind of community service along with the education, so that there would be appreciation of the... they would see that character development is there, actually. Yeah.
2 points. Therefore, I implore devotees in this class to please make themselves available to get in the Bhagavad Gita class.
Okay, here's some practical... Well, here's one suggestion for practical application from Parvati Mataji, that we go and all go and give Bhagavad Gita class at 6 o'clock. We go and give class.
Second point is, I remember in our temple here in Vrindavan, only the devotees and the Gurukul kids used to clean the temple. And the temple was always so clean, the grounds were so clean, because there was an awareness.
Yeah.
Because they were cleaning and there was an awareness.
Yeah.
So somehow or other, it isn't that you have to clean the temple to be aware of how proud you are.
Some kind of Vaishnava, even Vaishnava Seva would be nice. Some kind. Anyway, there should be some outreach with the community. My suggestion is also that there should be Hindi Bhakti Shastri, very much. Okay, I think we have to go on because this could turn into Ishtagoshti here. Ishtagoshti here. Let's go on to verse 18. We can remember all these thoughts and think about them. Perhaps we can have an Ishtagoshti or something, if you want, to implement these things. Verse 18. One should not go to anyone's house, even on the consideration of his being a relative or friend, when the man is disturbed in his mind and looks upon the guests with raised eyebrows and angry eyes. So now Lord Shiva is saying, yes, you want to go and see your sisters and your relatives. What if they act like an enemy towards you? Then what? Are they still your friends and relatives if they behave towards you inimically? End of the purport. Prabhupada says, malicious persons should not be trusted because they are always unsteady. Thus, Sati was advised not to go to her father's house because to accept such a father as a relative and to go to his house without being properly invited was not suitable. So there is a verse, 4:22:11. Vyalalaya juma vaite shakita kilasam para yakihas tirt pariya para tirta vivarjita. Even though full of all opulence and material prosperity, any householder's house or the devotees of the Lord are never allowed to come in, and when there is no water for washing their feet, is to be considered a tree in which all venomous serpents live. So there's a famous saying by Chanaka Pandit, Sarpakura Kalakura Sarpakurata Kala, that the snake is very crooked, but a person who is like a snake is much worse than a regular snake. Because you can tame a snake by mantras and herbs, but an envious person cannot be controlled by any means. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prayed in the 5th canto, Swastyasti Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam Tayantu Bhutani Shivam Mitodhya Manascha Bhadram Vajatadad Hoksajaya Veshatam No Matirapyahitaki. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. So the reason why I'm quoting this verse by Prahlad Maharaj is because the word Shiva is in the verse. He says, Shivam mito dhiya. So there the word Shiva means thinking of the welfare of others. So another meaning for Shiva, very auspicious. Another meaning of Shiva is very auspicious. So this is the way to pacify all the envious persons, by engaging them in devotional service, and then they will all become like Lord Shiva, thinking of the welfare of others. So then verse 19. This is, the reference is 518.9, Prahlad Maharaj. And the first one was 422.11. A householder who does not welcome the devotees is like a place of snakes. 19. But Shiva continued, if one is hurt by the arrows of an enemy, one is not as aggrieved as when cut by the unkind words of a relative. For such grief continues to rend one's heart day and night. So Lord Shiva is saying, you want to see your relatives, but if your relative acts like an enemy, this will be so painful to your heart because you're attached. And just imagine your son, you fed him your whole life, and then he grows up and he becomes your enemy. Goes to court. There's some court cases, sons against mothers. So this is so painful for the mother. Things like this happen. So for Sati, her father, who is very dear to her, if he treats her badly, it's going to be very painful. Purport, Prabhupada says, Sati might have concluded that she would take the risk of going to her father's house. And even if her father spoke unkindly against her, she would be tolerant, as a son sometimes tolerates the reproaches of his parents. But Lord Shiva reminded her that she would not be able to tolerate such unkind words, because natural psychology dictates that although one can suffer harm from an enemy and not mind so much, because pain inflicted by an enemy is natural, when one is hurt by the strong words of a relative, one suffers the effects continually, day and night. Sometimes the injury becomes so intolerable, one commits suicide. So Prabhupada's hinting at the outcome of what's going to happen to Sati. And I may add also that I think in ISKCON also, it's like we're one big family. So if somebody in ISKCON hurts you, then you feel it much more. Outsiders, you expect it. But if somebody in your ISKCON family does it, then it, you feel like, well, these are devotees. And then for that, then sometimes devotees leave for that reason. That, oh, it's better outside. The people outside are much nicer. Because actually, it hurts more when a devotee says something to you like that. So this is all for our instruction here. Very instructive verses. 20. My dear white complexion wife, Gauri, it is clear that of the many daughters of Daksha, you are the pet. Yet you will not be honored at his house because of your being my wife. Rather, you will be sorry that you are connected with me. So here's the argument. She's saying, you're half my body, so therefore you should be merciful to me. But actually, Lord Shiva is saying, because half of my body is yours, or you're half my body, then that half of the body that's mine will be insulted by Daksha when you go there. He will also see, yes, you and Lord Shiva, you're one. So therefore, he will insult you because of your connection with me. He will see, yes, you're half the body. He won't see that this is my daughter. He'll just see the part that's related to Shiva. So there's two halves of the body. Half belongs to Daksha, half belongs to Shiva, the father and the husband. So we'll see that Sati will want to destroy the part that belongs to Daksha later on. Fourth chapter. Yes.
The translation is my dear white complexion wife.
White complexion wife, yes.
I don't see it in the word for word, although I do see
it. You don't see it in the word for word.
Beautiful eyebrows.
Mm-hmm. Supru. Well, interesting. So Prabhupada put it in. Or one of the acharyas, yeah. Yeah. Who knows? So, Burijan Prabhu. Now, oh no, this is in verse 21. Let me read the verse first. Verse 21. One who is conducted by false ego and thus always distressed, both mentally and sensually, cannot tolerate the opulence of self-realized persons. Being unable to rise to the standard of self-realization, he envies such persons as much as demons envy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now in this verse, Brijan quotes, comments that this is a philosophical truth that is applied to practical dealings. That somebody who cannot tolerate somebody else's advancement, this is all within devotees, all this discussion here. Daksha's a devotee, Shiva's a devotee. So this is actually pertaining to us. This is happening between devotees here, all these problems. Everything here is all between devotees. So there's one devotee here, conducted by false ego and always distressed mentally and socially. He can't tolerate if someone else becomes more advanced than him. He's not self-realized, but he sees someone who's self-realized and he becomes envious. So Brijan comments that when we apply a philosophy to practical dealings, it is called ethics or sadachar. And ultimately we have to apply it. And this whole fourth canto is showing us the application of our philosophy. So then Brijan asks the question, so we have our philosophy, Krishna is in everyone's heart. How do we apply that philosophy? Krishna is in everyone's heart. What is the practical application of that philosophy, Prashanta?
We offer
obeisances to everyone?
To the devotees.
Okay.
Everyone in general.
Especially to the devotees. But what if Krishna is in everyone's heart, not only devotees?
Offer,
is that how you, okay? So Prashanta suggests we should offer obeisances to everyone? Oh, internally, okay, internally.
Prabhupada even mentions that when you see Mayavadi sannyasis, you should pay obeisances at least
monthly. Mentally, Mayavadi sannyasis. Okay, because they follow, yes, Adi Purush.
Be respectful
to everyone, okay. And I think Raja Bihari brought up a nice verse yesterday, 4:8:34. Yeah, about, I don't remember exactly. So,
if they're more superior, be happy.
If they're superior to you, be happy. Don't be envious. Like
compassionate
to someone.
Make
friendship with your equals. So you respect everyone, but it internally and externally it manifests in different ways. If someone is your superior, you serve. You be happy to see him. And
how about if somebody's envious?
Yes. So well. Yeah. Okay. That's what we're dealing with here in this lila. What if someone is envious? Or there's two different things. And I mean, envy may be within; it may not be manifest. But blasphemy is manifest. So how do we deal? Yes.
In 11:246.
Okay, Madhya Madhikari. Talks about Madhya Madhikari. Okay, Uddhava was paying obeisances to Duryodhana, but it should not be imitated. Okay. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati comments. Okay. So let's see what Brijan Prabhu says. When we respect individuals, that's how we respect Krishna. So then he quotes Lord Kapila Dev, if you worship the deity in the temple but don't respect other living entities, you're the lowest grade devotee. So now in the purport, Prabhupada explains what is the real reason for Daksha's envy. What is the root of it? What is the root of his envy? Who can tell me? Why is he envious? He's living under a tree, yeah.
Because
he's a guna avatar.
And Daksha, in no way can rise to that standard.
Yes. So then that's one point. The second point, Prabhupada says, oh, you know it, the second point? He's much more advanced, yes. He's a guna avatar, Prabhupada says, and because Lord Shiva was directly in contact with a super soul, therefore honored and given a better sitting place than he. There were many other reasons also. Daksha, being materially puffed up, could not tolerate the high position of Lord Shiva. So his anger at Lord Shiva's not standing up in his presence was only the final manifestation of his envy. Now Prabhupada is going to explain what Lord Shiva will explain a bit later himself. Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva is always in meditation and always perceives the Supersoul as expressed here by the words Purusha Buddhi Sakshinam. The position of one whose intelligence is always absorbed in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very great and cannot be imitated by anyone, especially an ordinary person. When Daksha entered the arena of Yajna, Lord Shiva was in meditation, might not have seen Daksha enter, but Daksha took the opportunity to curse him because Daksha had maintained an envious attitude towards Lord Shiva for a long time. So actually, what Prabhupada's pointing out here is it's not just the fact that he failed to offer respect. He was just waiting for an opportunity to do something against Lord Shiva. It's not the external thing, that just that little thing that made him angry and curse. He wanted to curse. He just had that desire for a long time. He wanted to do something because he was envious. So Prabhupada said that was just something else. Those who are actually self-realized see every individual body as a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Paramatma feature is residing in everyone's body. So now paragraph 2, this is the important part, very important. When one offers respect to the body, it is not to the material body, but to the presence of the Supreme Lord. Thus, one who is always in meditation upon the Supreme Lord is always offering him obeisances. So if you're meditating, you're always offering obeisances. But since Daksha was not very elevated, he thought obeisances were offered to the material body, and because Lord Shiva did not offer respect to his material body, Daksha became envious. Such persons, being unable to rise to the standard of self-realized souls like Lord Shiva, are always envious. So we see this envy in the pastime of Hiranyakashipu with Prahlad, that Hiranyakashipu was also very envious of Prahlad because he wouldn't listen. He was stronger. He said, "Prahlad, you know when I'm angry, all the planets of the three worlds tremble, along with their chief rulers. But you are fearless. You don't listen. You don't care. How are you so fearless?" Prahlad said, "Yes, the same source of strength that you are having, Lord Krishna, is my source of strength." And so this is, the envy continues between the non-devotees and devotees. Yes?
How is it? Yeah?
Yeah, he's got everything. That's a good point. Daksha's got everything. He's got full enjoyment of his senses. He can procreate as much as he wants. He's got a nice place to live. He's got so much opulence. So why does he have to be envious? Right. Well, no, that's not true. No, but with each other, you know, you have to keep up with the rat race. Okay. I also can answer that. Yes, go ahead. No, but when Prabhupada was here, the non-devotees, they were very envious because we are not working. They see you don't have a job, but you have a nice place to live. You have vehicles. You have money. You're not working. Why don't you go get a job? Why should we? We just use the things that you have, Prabhupada said. You build a nice park, you build a nice house, we go and use it for Krishna. Yeah. Yeah, peace. Actually, devotees have peace. They're happy. They're happy. And they're not.
You live without a job.
Yeah, I know. The devotees are so happy. People get envious. You're happy. I'm working hard all day, and I'm living a good life, and I'm honest, and I'm moral. And you guys, you don't work, you just sing and dance. And you're happy and I'm not. Okay.
Well, I think that there is an increase of envy if the person actually really would like to be like or
okay. You think there's more envy if he would like to.
Yeah,
anyway.
Because he's just guiding himself, and he can't that's the person who's sensing you.
Okay. Prashanta, did you have something, sir?
No, just the fact that among this society of envious people or materialistic people, if someone somehow wants to become liberated, they will try to stop that person.
Yes. That's true, actually. That's true. Her point is that amongst the envious non-devotees, if they see somebody who's trying to become liberated, they'll want to stop him. And just like this deprogramming. So he brought the point about Guru Kulis, who for years wanted to take Bhakti Shastri, but their friends were saying, oh, you're just on a pure devotee trip. Like this, okay?
But that may be a result that's similar to Adi Krishna's point that maybe when people, I think what really upsets people is not true religion.
That's true. That's also.
The lousy ones. So the devotees truthfully saw so much hypocrisy.
Right, okay.
And I think the people that Adi Krishna, a large percentage of them, are really upset at all the
cheating.
Cheating that's going on in the name of religion.
Okay.
Sometimes like a sweeping.
Generalizations. Okay, so that's also another point, that there are so many cheating religionists that therefore people are fried, they're frustrated, and so they can't distinguish the real ones from the false ones, so therefore they also try to stop the pure devotees. So these are good points. Let's go on to verse 22. My dear young wife, certainly, friends and relatives offer mutual greetings by standing up, welcoming one another, and offering obeisances. But those who are elevated to the transcendental platform, being intelligent, offer such respects to the super soul who is sitting within the body, not to the person who identifies with the body. So again, in the purport, very interesting purport here by Srila Prabhupada, and he goes into this in detail. So I'm going to read this purport. It may be argued that since Daksha was the father-in-law of Lord Shiva, it was certainly the duty of Lord Shiva to offer him respect. In answer to that argument, it is explained here that when a learned person stands up or offers obeisances and welcome, he offers respect to the super soul who is sitting within everyone's heart. It is seen, therefore, among Vaishnavas. So here's a point of etiquette and also a point of knowledge. That even when a disciple offers obeisances to his spiritual master, the spiritual master immediately returns the obeisances because they are mutually offered not to the body, but to the super soul. Therefore, the spiritual master also offers respect to the super soul situated in the body of the disciple. The Lord says in Srimad Bhagavatam that offered respect to his devotee is more valuable than offering respect to him. Devotees do not identify with the body. So offering respect to a Vaishnava means offering respect to Vishnu. Because the devotee's thinking, it's not my body, it doesn't belong to me, it belongs to Krishna. So when you offer obeisances to a devotee, then you're offering actually to Vishnu. Okay, it is stated also that as a matter of etiquette, as soon as one sees a Vaishnava, one must immediately offer him respect, indicating the super soul sitting within. A Vaishnava sees the body as a temple of Vishnu. Since Lord Shiva had already offered respect to the super soul in Krishna consciousness, offering respect to Daksha, who identified with his body, was already performed. There is no need to offer respect to his body, for that is not directed by any Vedic injunction. So we've been discussing how to offer respect to different living entities. So I have a nice verse here, which is spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava 11, verses 43 to 45. So the best way, if you want to be servant of the servant, or if you want to offer respect to a devotee or to any living entity, is to do it the way Krishna says. So now Lord Krishna will instruct us how to offer respect to all living entities. So first of all, Lord Krishna says, one should worship me within the sun in this way. So I'll ask you, I'll tell you the particular living entity, and without looking at your computers, you can tell me what your answer. How do you offer respect to the sun? It's all right if you already saw it, because I didn't tell you yet. You didn't see it.
Sun.
To the sun in the sky. Not your sun, but...
Facing the sun?
No, but what's the what do you do? Gayatri Mantra. Okay, let's see what Krishna says. By performing, that's one way. Selected Vedic mantras. Also by performing worship and offering obeisances.
Putting water
Obeisance.
Not water, land.
Worship. Worship, worship. Worship, W-R-S-H-I-P. Now, how to worship Krishna in fire? Yajna, yes, oblations of ghee. How to worship Krishna among the Brahmins? Feed them. Receiving them as guests, even when uninvited. Krishna within the cows. He's saying, me within these different, this is how you worship me within these different living entities. Krishna within the cows. What? Protect them? Feed them. Grass. He says, I like, within the cow, I like grass. Grains. Paraphernalia. He's got a lot of things here. For the pleasure and health of the cows. Okay, how do you worship me within the Vaishnavas? Offering loving friendship to them and honoring them in all respects. Okay, how to worship the inner space of the heart? That's a hard one. Meditation, steady meditation. How to worship the inner space of the heart? I am worship. How to worship Krishna within the inner space of the heart? By meditation. This is all Krishna. We're worshiping Krishna within different elements and different living entities. Okay, within the air. This is difficult. Within the air. How do you worship Krishna in the air?
Breathe.
Breathe. well, here, Krishna says, by knowledge that prana, the life air, is the chief among elements. So prana, Krishna is prana. Okay, within water, Krishna is worship. Yes, offering of water. If you can worship Krishna within water by offering water. Offering water to water. Krishna within water. Okay, among elements such as, okay, among the other elements, you should offer flowers and tulsi. And worship me within the earth, this is hard also, by proper application of confidential seed mantras. Whatever that means.
Dancing in
kirtan. Dancing in kirtan. Okay, within the individual living entity, just the ordinary man. Krishna and the ordinary men. He says food. Feed them.
Food for life.
Other enjoyable substances. Not only food, other enjoyable things. And worship me within... Oh, here's that was individual living entity. And then here's another one. Worship me within all living entities by seeing the super soul within all of them, thus maintaining equal vision. So it's a nice instruction by Lord Krishna to Uddhava how to worship Krishna within different elements and living entities and everywhere. And this is practical application of the philosophy of seeing Krishna in everyone's heart.
To be more specific, there's also been an injunction of Rupa Goswami.
Injunction of Rupa Goswami. Yeah, that's for Vaishnavas, yes? This is the fifth verse of Nectar of Instruction, Krishneti Yasya Giritam Manasa Adiyeta. That first you should
mentally honor
one who has
only
uttered Hare Krishna once. You should mentally honor. Madhyama. One who has taken diksha and doing worship. Offer obeisances physically. Uttamadikari. Inquire and serve physically, not mentally. Okay, one last comment. Sankirtan
Das. Question.
Question.
In this verse, it speaks about two positions. One is the body conscious and one is the super soul conscious. I wonder why is there not an option of soul, seeing the soul? It seems like you see the super soul, you offer obeisances. Or then a person who doesn't see the super soul and sees bodily connected.
Okay, so Sankirtan...
What about the soul itself?
Okay, Sankirtan Prabhu's question is, we're seeing offering respect to the body and offering respect to the super soul. What about the soul? How do you know how? Yes, there is a verse that you have to learn for this canto. If anybody learned it already, then you can quote it. Yes, yata taramula nishechane na. Okay. Yes. Yes, they're connected. Yes. Yes. So the soul is a branch or a part of the tree of the super soul. So let's go to the next verse. This verse is the verse 23. Satvam vishuddham vasure vishaptitam yari yate tatra pumana pavita sarve chitasmin bhagavan vasudeva yadoksa jame namasavidiyate. Verse 23, I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudeva in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudeva, is revealed without any covering. So this is a really huge purport, but in this verse, Lord Shiva is now explaining his own consciousness, explaining that then we can learn what is pure consciousness. So previously we have heard Sati's level of consciousness. We've heard Daksha's level of consciousness. Now we're hearing about Lord Shiva's level of consciousness. It's Vasudeva consciousness. And on this board here, I've made at a glance a mind map of the purport, all the different points that Prabhupada makes. And down at the bottom, that's not part of the purport, but that's a quote that I'll give you at the bottom, Vishuddha Sattva. These are all the meanings of Vasudev, different types of consciousness. Also on the flip chart, I've done it very in brief, but here I've done it much more completely on the board. So then you can follow along perhaps easier. I'm not going to read this whole purport, of course, but I would like to read a little bit. In paragraph 2, Shuddha Sattva, described in this verse, is a transcendental position, technically called Vasudeva. So that's here. Shuddha Sattva is called Vasudeva. Vasudeva is called Shuddha Sattva. Then the next point is the name, Prabhupada says, the name of the person from whom Krishna appears is Vasudeva. So Krishna's father is Vasudeva. So these are different points. Then the next point, this verse explains that the pure state is called Vasudeva because in that state, Vasudeva, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed without any covering. So here, pure state, pure consciousness causes Krishna's appearance. So when we come to the Vasudeva state in our consciousness, Krishna will naturally appear in our hearts. This is the actual state in which Krishna appears. It's the name of the person, and it's the name of the state of consciousness in which Krishna appears without any covering. So then Prabhupada says, to execute unadulterated devotional service, therefore, one must follow the rules and regulations of devotional service without desire to gain material profit by fruitive activities or mental speculation. So again, now in paragraph 2, it talks about pure devotional service. So Shuddha Sattva I have up there is pure devotion, transcendental. So this in this state, pure devotional service is done, and the two qualities of pure devotional service without desire for material profit or mental speculation. In other words, karma, what is it? Jnana karma? Anavritam. So in this state, pure devotional service, Krishna, all these things will happen. Krishna will appear in your heart, in this state. So that's paragraph 2. In pure devotional, paragraph 3. In pure devotional service, one simply serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a matter of duty without reason, without being impeded by material conditions. So what verse is that from Bhagavatam? Prabhupada is quoting here. One verse, I don't know if we learned it. It's in chapter 2 of first canto. It's Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam, Chayat, Ahaitukam. So the two qualities, Ahaitukam and what is the other one? Anyway, Ahaitukam is one of them. Without impediment and without reason. Oh, 1 to 6. Okay, sorry, yeah, I got the wrong. Savai Punsam Parotarmo. Ah, acha. Ahaituki Apratiyata. Yeah, I got the wrong Ahaituki.
What's the number?
1 to 6. Yeah, yeah. Ahaituki Apratiyata. Okay. 1 to 6. So Prabhupada says this is called Shuddha Sattva or Vasudeva because in that stage the Supreme Person, Krishna, is revealed in the heart of the devotee. So here's something else in the next sentence that could be put up on the board. Srila Jiva Goswami has very nicely described Vasudeva Shuddha Sattva in his Bhagavat Sandarbha. He explains that Shottara Shata 108 is added to the name of spiritual master to indicate one who is situated in Shuddha Sattva, of the transcendental state of Vasudeva. So then Prabhupada goes on to explain different other meanings of the word Vasudeva. It means all-pervading. It means Kaivalya. These are, and it also means the sun. Vas, another name, and that is specifically Vasudeva Shabditam indicates the sun. So these are all different meanings of Vasudeva. So then in paragraph 4, Prabhupada asks the question, how can you have this Vasudeva state if you're in this material body, which is made of material senses? How is it possible? And Prabhupada gives the answer. Well, he asks the question first. How is it possible the same materialistic eyes become purified by devotional service? So that's Prabhupada's question. And what's the answer? Iha yasya hara dasye karmana manasa kila. So, okay, by engaging in devotional service by body, mind, and words. Yes, that is the answer. As stated by Lord Chaitanya, Chaita Darpana Marjanam. If you engage in devotional service, it cleans the mirror of the mind, and in a clean mirror, you see your face. You see Krishna's face also. Because the mind is the mirror. And now our mind is showing us so many other faces and so many other things besides Krishna. So this is the point. Then the last paragraph, near the end, Prabhupada explains, now what is the duty of the devotee after the Lord has revealed himself? Now, okay, now you become purified, you've got Vasudeva Shabditam, you're seeing the Lord in the heart, what is your duty?
To serve?
To serve? To offer obeisances. Somebody read the purport. And Prabhupada says, no other duty than offering obeisances to the Lord. Amazing, huh? That's all you have to do. Of course, offering obeisances is quite a difficult thing to do all the time. So what it means, of course, is offering obeisance in the heart and practically externally manifesting that attitude towards all living entities. So this is Vasudeva Shabditam. Now the verse which I added here from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 462, it describes Vishuddha Sattva. And the verse is, goes like this. Anandangshe Hladini Sadangshe Santani Chidangshe Samvit Jare Gyana Korimani. Hladini is his aspect of bliss, Sandini, eternal existence, and Samvit of cognizance, which is also accepted as knowledge. Srila Jiva Goswami explains in Bhagavat Sandarbha that the transcendental potency by which the Lord maintains his existence is Santini. Transcendental potency by which he knows himself and causes others to know him is called Samvit. And the transcendental potency by which he possesses transcendental bliss and causes his devotees to have bliss is called Hladini. And the total exposition of these potencies is called Vishuddha Sattva. So therefore I added this to Vasudeva, Vishuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva, Vishuddha Sattva. It's the three, it's the state, in, it's the complete exhibition of these three potencies, is Vishuddha Sattva. So that's also there, it's on the flip chart and on the board. And Prabhupada explained in the purport also that each of these three, the Hladini, the Sandini, and the Samvit, influences one of the external potencies by which of the conditioned souls are conducted This influence manifests the three modes of material nature. So these three potent spiritual ones are influencing the three material modes of nature. This is the end of that purport of 462. So these are interesting observations about Vasudeva consciousness, what it means, what is this Vishuddha Sattva. In the purport in a lecture on Kunti, perhaps a purport, Prabhupada says, by the grace of Kunti Devi, we can understand Krishna Vasudeva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the verse is, Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandagopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So Prabhupada said, the word Vasudeva indicates the Lord is understood when one comes to the platform of Vasudeva, pure goodness, or Vishuddha Sattva. So again, here, Vishuddha Sattva means Vasudeva also. So Prabhupada says, so how do we do it? By hearing about Krishna. You come to the platform of pure goodness, Shinvatam, Swakata, Krishna, Punya Shavana Kirtana. So Prabhupada's advice to us, if we want to get to this Vasudeva platform, is given, I think this is a purport of Queen Kunti's prayer. We should try to hear and chant about Krishna always, 24 hours a day, and in this way the dirty things will be cleansed from our hearts. So now the last two verses, we'll just finish. 24, therefore you should not see your father, although he is the giver of your body, because he and his followers are envious of me. Because of his envy, O most worshipful one, he has insulted me with cruel words, although I am innocent. So Prabhupada paraphrases Lord Shiva's words, your father is undoubtedly worshipable, even more than I am, but take care, because for although he is the giver of your body, he may also be the taker of your body, because when you see your father, because of your association with me, he may insult you. An insult from a relative is worse than death, especially when one is well situated. So over and over again, he's telling her, don't go there, it's like death. Actually, he's telling her, you're going to die if you go to your father's house. He's actually telling her, 25. Again, he says it, if in spite of this instruction, you decide to go, neglecting my words, the future will not be good for you. You are most respectable, and when you are insulted by your relative, this insult will immediately be equal to death. So again, he's telling her, you're going to die. So Lord Shiva is countering most of Sati's arguments and explaining his own position. So now it's her choice. Am I going to follow the instruction of Lord Shiva, my husband, who is on the transcendental level, who has no envy, who is speaking for my own welfare, or am I going to follow my heart, which is not so pure, not so clear? I'm attached to my family. She's already admitted I'm attached to the place of my birth. I'm attached to this. I want social life. So often, as devotees, we are faced with similar choices, that we know the philosophy very well, but then sometimes we're stopped by our attachments to actually apply it practically to our lives. We're stopped. We know this is actually philosophical correct thing to do. But then when it comes to actually doing it, and we don't, for some reason or other. So this is the choice that's before all of us, the same choice that Sati is being given here. And she's instructed very nicely the consequences. He's not exactly telling her not to go. He's just saying, if you go, this is what's going to happen. He's not telling her, stay or go. He's just saying, but if you go, this may happen. You may be insulted. You may die. So many things may happen. So this is the way sometimes the guru instructs that, okay, you want to do this. The disciple says, can I do this? The guru says, well, if you do this, then this will happen. So he's not saying don't do it, but he's saying these are the consequences. What's that?
Krishna does that too.
Yeah, he told Arjuna.
If you want to come tell the whole thing again.
Yes. Yeah, he said, Arjuna, if you don't fight, then you'll still fight. If you don't fight according to my direction, you will still have to fight. This is what's going to happen if you don't fight. You'll fight. Anyway, you say you want to be a sannyasi, a beggar, but you're going to fight because it's your nature. Okay, so What else? Any comments or questions? Yes, Rajbihari.
What's our, why does 108
significant? Well, Prabhupada explained. In the purport.
What is he? No, he doesn't really.
He doesn't say the number. He doesn't say the number, but he explains the concept.
Yeah, but why the
number? 108. Why the number 108? Does anybody know? I mean, we can guess. We can guess.
Only 108 gopis?
108 gopis? 108,
no,
108
sure,
queens? 16,108. I guess when you go there, you'll find out. That's what the proper answer would be. When you go there, of course, we all do. Do we want to hear Adi Purusha's speculation? Okay, I guess he's going to tell us anyway.
It's not entirely mine. I just read it in some book on India.
Okay, it's not Adi's, it's somebody else's. Now, do we want to hear it or not? I guess we're curious. We're all curious. Numerology?
Yeah.
So, okay.
These are like the basic numbers for the material world. There is one, and there is duality, two of twos, and there is three of threes. And if you multiply all this, it comes up to 108.
How far do you go up to 9?
Yeah.
Or just this? You just multiply all those.
Yeah. 4 by 27. So it's kind of reflects the basic nature of this world.
Wow.
The main tattvas or the main thing.
Okay, 108 reflects. Yeah, but what does it have to do with being in the transcendental position? That's my question. Because Prabhupada said that 108 means that they're in the transcendental position. So now we know what the opposite is. To be in the non-transcendental position, 108 is also there. What about the other side, that 108?
It just means that it's including all the truths of tattvas.
It's including all the truths. What are the truths? What's one? What's two? What's three? Okay. Oh, it didn't tell you? They didn't tell you? Oh. Duality. Yeah, two is duality. One is the Lord.
One is Lord Chaitanya.
All right.
Three are the modes. Three have some.
Three modes.
Samvid
Halenini. The three worlds. The Lord of Threes. Tradish. And we can see it materially or spiritually. Yes. Duality. Two twos. Okay. It's in the purport. Ashutra Sutta. Yeah, I read it. I read it, actually. Maybe it passed you by. Yes, Madhu in the Puri Purport.
Perhaps it's related to the Srila Prabhupada quotes Uddhava Gita in the purport.
Srila Prabhupada quotes Uddhava Gita?
In 23.
Acha. Yeah, I didn't.
And then it says, absolute knowledge in the Buddha goodness. Knowledge based on duality is in the world of passion.
Where is this?
It quotes Kevalyam. It gives us the words Kevalyam Savikam Gyanam.
Oh, yeah, Gyanam Savikam Kaivalyam.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from Uddhava Gita. Good.
And it refers to the fact that knowledge in the world of goodness is absolute, knowledge in the world of passion is based on duality, and knowledge in the world of ignorance is materialistic.
Okay, let me just repeat that. Now, it's based on the fact that knowledge in the mode of goodness is absolute.
Yes.
Knowledge in the mode of passion is based on duality. And knowledge in the mode of ignorance is
based on materialism.
And Krishna concludes by saying, knowledge about me is transcendental. Okay, Jnanam Satvikam Kaivalyam.
Because it's connected to Krishna.
108 gopis, 108 wives, 108 beads, mala, 108
holy.
Acha, 108 holy. Okay, well, could be 1008. Acha, this time. All right. All right, what, any more?
Yeah, I
don't know either. We don't know. It's probably in some esoteric book somewhere. 108, whoever they are.
Yes.
108 beads, yeah, for the 108 gopis. 108 beads. For
first eight.
First eight, right. Yeah, separates the eight. That thing in between.
String.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I tried giving a donation of 108
rupees.
108 rupees. I guess it might have been rupees.
Yeah.
Something like that. The jar refused it because it was an even number.
109. Okay. Anyway. All right. Is this on the new question? Or? All right, Sankirtan.
When we spoke about Vasudev,
yeah.
It's good to take note of the different pronunciations. Vasudev.
Yeah, Vasudev and Vasudev.
So there's one use for the Lord.
One is for the Lord, Vasudev. That's the name of the Lord. And Vasudev is... The state of Vasudev is short, Vasudev, and the father. Yeah, that's why Vasudev, not Vasudev. Vasudev is Krishna. Yes. Yeah, short and long, yeah. Only Krishna is long, and the rest are short. Yeah.
There's another meaning we have in 111.
111, okay. Yeah, yeah. Purport?
Yes. Srila Prabhupada explained that Vasudev is a better portion of the Lord, as you know. And all the
Vasudev, so that's the long A though. That's the long A,
yes.
So it's not the same.
And all the expressions come from Vasudev.
Okay.
So it's the source of all the.
Okay, so that's actually not exactly what this is, but it's the long Vasudev. Vasudev.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is Vasudev, as he just made the point. So you're enlightening us about another meaning of Vasudev. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Sankirtan. Yeah, we got time.
Yeah, the point we had before. Basis system in the super soul, or this understood one offers a basis system of material body.
Yeah.
Now, I think here Prabhupada explains the point more in 23. He says at the end.
23.
And whenever there is a question of surrendering or offering a basis system, there must be an optimum surrender for a basis system.
Where is this, 23?
The last sentence.
Okay. Right. Basing. There must be an object of surrender or obeisances. Right. Yes. Prabhupada explained that in the purport, that if you offer obeisances to a Vaishnava, it's to Vishnu. Well, it's because... That's his mentality.
Every spiritual is jiva.
Yes. But the difference is that the Vaishnava is acting as part of Krishna, whereas the non-devotee is acting as if separate from Krishna. So that's the big difference. So when you offer obeisance to a Vaishnava, he is connected, he's conscious, and he's acting as connected to Krishna in his connection. So that's the difference.
Yes.
He's acting as... Yes, he's aware and he's acting in that connection to Krishna. Any other questions? Comments? Because I would like to ask Prashanta, did you bring it? If we have no other questions or comments, I want to Prashanta to show us something. Yashoda Mataji trained all the teaching assistants in mind mapping, and we were thinking it would be nice if everyone could also try to apply this to their studies. It's a very good way to study. You can mind map a chapter, do a mind map of a chapter. So she's done some mind maps just as a model to show us. These are her mind maps. It's not like it's the mind map.
Who's her?
Prashanta.
Why is it called mind map?
Because it's, anyway, you should have come to the class. Yes, he wrote the book. Yeah, look in my bag. Yeah, there's a person who wrote the book, and he did mind mapping. So it follows the pattern of the mind. It's a very good way to learn things and to study, prepare for class. So Prashanta Mataji is going to show us her mind maps of chapter 2. So everybody can do a mind map, and if anybody has would like to do one of a chapter and show it to the class, like chapter 4 or chapter 3, you have... What's... Oh, computer thing. You need a computer. Yeah. Okay, you try. You can give it to my son and see if he can figure it out. Okay, so here's... You can explain it to us.
This is a simple one at the beginning of the chapter to remember what is this chapter.
Chapter 2.
This is the story of Shiva and Daksha and all the personalities who are involved with the chapter.
Okay, so this is the personalities. The first one, the personalities of the chapter. Second one is?
Second one is the Leela.
The Leela. This is a map of the Leela, my map of the Leela of chapter 2.
The Daksha Yagya, the Leela. How it begins with the questions by Vidura. He's asking basically two questions. Why was Daksha envious? And why did Sati give up her body and how? And the rest of the chapter will deal with the answer of the first... why was Daksha envious of Shiva? This is what we are going to hear in this chapter. And the first part was Daksha cursing Shiva with what happened to him, no share and sacrifice. The second part, verses 20 to 26, was Nandishwar cursing Daksha and the Brahmanas and all what they will become here, or what will happen to them due to this curse. And then we heard 27 to 32, Bhrigu cursed the Shiva's followers, and this is what will happen to them, they will become atheists, devilish, deviated from Shastric injunctions. And in the end, Shiva leaves and the yagya begins. This is the simple story of that.
So this is the storyline. This is the Leela, chapter 2 at a glance of the Leela. And now one more is the thematic.
Some themes. Some of the themes we heard and studied in this chapter.
Philosophical line or themes? Do you find?
We heard, of course, of the two main themes where we were studying the behavior of the Vaishnav as opposed to the behavior of the materialistic persons. And we heard there the references of the verses here, the qualities of the Vaishnavas, his activities, descriptions, and so one was is Lord Shiva, the Vaishnava, and Daksha is the exemplified materialistic person. And regarding him, we heard of his qualities, activities in chapter 2, and we heard about Vaishnava Parad. Then we heard of faulty worship, different kinds of faulty worship, including faulty worship of Shiva, leading people to become Mayavadis, tantrics. We also spoke of the hippies. And we faulty worship, Prabhupada mentioned the Prabhupada is also the Buddhist. And then faulty worship of the demigods and Vishnu by the Smartas and the Brahma Bandhus. And we heard, there was quite a bit about the Vedas. And so many things we heard about the Vedas.
including the evidence of the authority of the Vedas, that it is followed. Those who follow the Vedas are usually highly cultured, whereas those who don't follow, they are degraded. That was the main evidence. And that it is spoken by Janardhan. And then we heard about pure devotional service in that chapter, where Prabhupada stressed the Sankirtan Yajna, and he stressed also the qualification being by how we know Krishna. So these different themes that were there. I have another chart which I didn't complete, which is different lessons that we heard from that chapter. We heard lessons in Sadachar, for example, how to offer respect, how to identify a person worthy of respect, not to judge by externals. So this is, we learned Sadachar. We learned a lot of things about aparad, the cause of aparad, and how to react to aparad, and how not to react to aparad, like Nandishwar, who overreacted. And the result of aparad, we heard, we know the dangers, the cause. And then we heard a lot about the actions of anger. And there was also, I think, connected to this paradigma, Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission was one important problem for us. So these are some of the things that we can represent like that. The idea is that when we, you know, at a glance, when we look at these things, if we do that, then so much will come back to memory just by looking at these things.
So it's a very good way to study, to review for exam. So we encourage our students to use this method of mind mapping.
We have bigger charts.
Yeah.
We probably use chart to chart four times the size of that. And I'm sure there is a little bit more in there.
Mm-hmm. For mind mapping.
There's four times the size of that.
Wow, size of the board.
One stage is four.
Oh, that's good.
And we have chart of made of both things for this side.
That's good. Okay, so any volunteers for chapter 4 or like to make a mind map? Chapter 3, chapter 4. 5 doesn't need one. I mean, you can make one of Leela in 5. You volunteer? For which one? Chapter 3. Chapter 3, okay. Anybody like to volunteer for chapter 4? Yeah, okay. So we'll look forward to the mind maps of the different students. And no two will be the same, I'm sure. If someone else had done it, it would have been different. Everyone has their own, what they see. So that's why it's so nice. I mean, there's some similarities, but... Yeah, so it's interesting just to see how it works. Yes?
It's not so much the language is about it, it's the planning. I think it's more the doing it which is about.
Yes.
Doing it itself.
Yes.
So for us, it doesn't mean so much.
Yes, if you do it, then you'll get the benefit. But we're just showing you how it is. One person's done it, so just inspire you to do it for yourself. And it will... Yeah, right, right. No, no, this is... You don't do it in your notebook. Yeah. Yeah, right. Then that's for you. That's for... Yeah, if it's going to be shared in a class, you make it big. If it's just for yourself, personal study, you don't need a huge thing like that. Yeah, any other questions and comments on this chapter of Daksha Yajna? Yes? Did he defeat... Your question is, did he actually defeat... Okay, let's look at the of her arguments. Let's see if Lord Shiva defeated all of them. First one, I want to see my relatives and dress up and socialize with everyone. So did he defeat that one?
Well, she says if you are invited.
No, that's a different one.
That's different.
Yeah. This one, I just want to go and socialize and see them. So was that defeated? Yes, because he said, what if you go there to see your relatives, but they insult you and they treat you very badly and they're angry with you? Is that going to make you, how are you going to socialize?
They won't relate to you in terms of my doctor. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the last argument. I'm half your body, so be merciful. Of course, it's not exactly, but that's in reference to the last argument. He says, you know, you're half my body. It's true, but it won't be good for you because you're half my body. Yeah.
She wanted to see her relatives. I think he also stressed that when her relatives are an enemy.
Yeah, when the relative's an enemy, then that's for two arguments. The one, desire to see them, and the other one is one may go uninvited to a relative's house. So argument 1 and 4. Then the other one, I'm not a pure devotee, I want to see my place of birth. So I don't know. Of course, you may want to go there, but what is going to be the consequence of going there? Oh, right, now she makes it, oh, this is a good point. See, he did defeat that argument. Your place of birth will be your place of death. So it may be that this is your place of birth, but just think, may also be your place of death. That's a good one. I didn't catch that. That's good, huh? Maybe your place of death also. So the last argument, I'm not a pure devotee. That's it. So, okay. The only one that's not covered is that, Lord Shiva, you're merciful to everyone, but what about me? Why don't you be merciful and let me go? Yeah, well, he's telling her this is his mercy. She doesn't appreciate his real mercy that he's actually telling her. Yes.
And also he does not suppress her. He's giving her free will.
Yeah, he's giving his free will.
Don't go as you wish.
Yeah, I'm telling you the facts. You do as you wish.
So,
yeah. Adi Purush.
Mercy is wishing good.
That's true. Okay, that's a good one. He said that if you go there, there will be no good. So his mercy is to tell her that he's wishing good for her. So therefore he's telling her, if you go, it won't be good. He's a well-wisher. So that's his mercy. Sankirtandas. One more lesson from?
From Shiva's behavior here. Because Shiva is without fault, so what he does is always good. You can see how he actually...
Yes. Right.
So there are appropriate situations where one can actually point out things.
There are times when you can say the truth.
Protect somebody else.
Yeah, he wants to protect her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You should not see your father.
Should not go. Okay, he did say. Yes. We were just discussing, someone brought up the question that did Shiva defeat all of the arguments of Sati? And then we found that actually he did. And there is, I'd like to share with you some of the realization. Prashanta Mataji, she said that Sati brought up, I want to see the place of my birth. So then how did he defeat that? It's because Lord Shiva said, yes, it is the place of your birth, it will also be the place of your death. Isn't it? Okay, it may be the place of your birth, but also, he's the giver of your body, he'll be the taker of your body. Yeah.
So then that brings up the question of how do you protect dependents like this from themselves?
Well, all you can do is instruct and tell the consequences. That's what I was asking Bhakti Vidyapur Maharaj about teenage, you know, how to deal with teenagers. And he said, you just have to be their friend and they have to make their own decisions. But you tell them, okay, this is the consequence of this decision, that's the consequence of that decision. You bring up what are the consequences, which they can't always see in their enthusiasm of
Enthusiasm, completely
Yeah.
So they're not going to hear.
Right. Well, there's no question of decision then. So you can't help them. But if there is a question of choice, decision, then you can help. But otherwise, if they're just going, what can you do? You can't. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. You gave her some trust, yeah.
I was thinking that she's going to do the listening.
Yeah, me too, me too. Yeah, I know, with my son too, I let him, I gave him access to email and everything, and it turns out he says, oh, I don't like email, internet. He says, I don't like internet at all. He says, I don't know what my friends see in it. And so I just trusted him, and I said, okay, you know, I know you're mature, and you can make proper decisions, and that was his conclusion, that it's a waste of time. It's useless. Okay. And that Krishna was like that. I mean, he gave all his instructions, but at the end he said, okay, I've taught you everything. Do what you want. It's your choice. I'll say the whole thing again, as Madhavendra Puri pointed out. So what was the other one? The one argument was place of birth, and the other, merciful, being merciful. Did he defeat the argument of that, oh, you're so merciful to everyone, why not me? So his mercy was thinking of her welfare. And her welfare, he said, it will not be good for you if you go. So that was his mercy. I'm not a pure devotee. I just placed, but part of that was that because I want to see my place of birth. This was her argument, I want to see my place of birth. So the answer is that it will be the place of your death. It may be the place of your birth, it will be also for your death. So we'll stop here.